From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Jeffrey Deaver is my guest, the author of many fine crime novels, including The Bone Collector and The Burning Wire. Jeffrey Deaver is now the author of the new James Bond novel, Carte Blanche. Jeffrey Deaver, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you, Gary. Good to talk to you.
Now, since Ian Fleming, who created 007 and wrote a dozen brilliant James Bond novels, died in 1964, there have been other authors who've written Bond stories, beginning with Colonel Sun by Kingsley Amis, I believe. And your Bond novel, Carte Blanche, is different. It's kind of a reboot, yes?
Yeah, exactly. When I was approached by the Ian Fleming estate about, I guess it was almost 2 years ago at this point, first of all, I was delighted. I've been a big Bond fan all my life. But I had two requirements, basically, the first things that came to my head. And one was that I wanted to write my type of novel, and we can talk about that in a minute if we'd like, but as opposed to, say, doing what Sebastian Foulkes did most recently in Devil May Care, the Bond novel from about 3 years ago, and he wrote as Ian Fleming. Well, I didn't want to do that. But my main requirement was that the book be updated. So the Bond in Carte Blanche is a roughly 30-something agent for the British government, and the book is set in 2011. And I did that for a number of reasons, but primarily because my theory about writing thriller fiction is to make sure that the reader has the most intense, emotionally engaging experience as possible. And I thought by keeping Bond back in the 1960s or even earlier, the 1950s when he first appeared, it would distance the reader from the experience of the story. Well, oddly enough, the estate agreed completely. That, in fact, had been their agenda even before I raised the question. So Bond is now, as you well put it, rebooted.
Well, no, but does that mean that the things that have happened to Bond in Ian Fleming's novels, like when Bond got married and things like that, that those things never happened?
Correct. To the extent that there was a biographical fact that could easily be brought into the present, I did incorporate that. For instance, Bond in the original series, as well as in Carte Blanche, is an orphan. His parents died when he was 11 years old in an accident in France. Bond lives in Chelsea, a very upscale, nice area of London. He drove a Bentley car in the original books. In my book, he drives a Bentley as well, and apologies to the Aston Martin folks. The Aston Martin was largely a product of the movie, although he drove an Aston Martin briefly in one of the books. The villains from the earlier books do not exist. I have brought back the cast of characters people expect, M, Miss Moneypenny, Felix Leiter, a few others, but they as well have been updated. So M is now, I don't mention his age, but roughly a 55 to 60-year-old head of this branch of the Secret Service, and we did that largely so that the fans of the original books would be satisfied, and yet we wanted to make sure that there was a world unto itself in Carte Blanche that would really be a new look at a Bond for the 21st century.
So you were saying that you were not writing as Ian Fleming, but did you write, you mentioned also your own type of novel, so did you write in Ian Fleming's style as opposed to your own natural voice, or did you write this book with a British accent? Or
no. Well, let me put it this way. A typical Jeffrey Deaver novel, and this goes back for the 30 novels that I've written, falls into this formula, and I have no problem calling it a formula. I like to produce a consistent product. A Deaver novel takes place over a short time period. It has a lot of internal deadlines, so that every three chapters, four chapters, something terrible is going to happen unless it can be averted. And, of course, looming over the whole story is a particularly heinous, evil event that occurs or doesn't occur in the climactic scene of the book. I have multiple plots going on at once. The book is really a roller coaster. And so that's what Carte Blanche is, and that's what I was going to write. Ian Fleming's books are actually quite character-driven. They're very linear, whereas I will have typically three or four subplots going on at once, all coming to a series of surprise endings, which I think are very important. Fleming didn't do that. We knew from the beginning who the bad guy was. There was very little surprise involved, and that's not why we experienced his writing. And so I really didn't have any desire, or frankly, the skill, I think, to try to mimic what Fleming did. So I set out to write my own book. But your comment is very good, because I did have to become British. Part of the joy of writing any novel is that we authors get to stand in the shoes of our characters. Now, it was pretty easy for me to do that with Bond, because I had read the book since I was about 8 or 9 years old. And when I went back and reread them, I took voluminous notes. I did a lot of research into British expressions, British culture, and I also have been going to England on book tour and for holiday probably 2 to 4 times a year for the last 20 years or so. So I was you know, fairly comfortable with being an American and writing a book about a British agent. And Fleming also was a pretty international writer. Bond, for instance, will occasionally get into an elevator, not a lift. Had I done that, of course, the British fans would have been all over. So I was pretty buttoned up about making sure my expressions were correct.
Well, so tell me a little bit more about researching it. So you went back and read all of Bond's work? I mean, all of Ian Fleming's work?
Exactly. The Fleming books were my only source material. I have read some of the continuation novels, Amos, of course, John Gardner, Raymond Benson, and Sebastian Phoebe, whom I mentioned a minute ago. And Charlie Hixon as well, who writes a very fun series, Young Bond, period pieces set back in the 30s when Bond was at Eton. But I didn't read any of those for the purposes of Carte Blanche, nor did I refer to the movies at all. So the Bond in my books physically resembles the man whom Fleming said his Bond looked like. That's Hoagy Carmichael, the American musician.
Right.
And I never refer to Roger Moore or Pierce Brosnan or Sean Connery. I wanted to get back to the original books. But that really was an attempt to get biographical information, and it was really the smallest part of the research. Once I had the fact down that he was going to drive a Bentley, he had a Scottish father and a Swiss mother. They had died in France when he was 11. Once I had that, you know, maybe 10, 20 pages of biography, then I had to do the serious research, which was looking into British intelligence services, of which there are many. I think they outdo us in terms of spies, and then do the research into the culture and language in Dubai, in the United Arab Emirates, where the book is partly set, South Africa, and Serbia as well. And then I did a lot of research into the subject of recycling and the environmental impact of waste collection, and that's the business that my villain has, Severin Height. And I knew really nothing about that other than it's good to recycle. And I did quite a bit of research into finding out about what happens with the trash, the recycling, dangerous waste removal, little things like that.
Well, you do have. I don't want to give away any of the twists and turns in your plot. But you do have a pretty intriguing thing about what happens to documents and so forth.
Do you think, well, it was funny because this fellow Height is a typical Deaver villain and an Ian Fleming villain too. And by that I mean Fleming would tend to have larger than life geopolitical oriented villains. They were bent on world domination or stealing nuclear missiles and selling them to somebody. Goldfinger, the villain, wanted to corner the market in gold. He was just obsessed with that and wreak havoc with the economy. And certainly Severin Height, my villain, does want to do that. He's behind this for commercial purposes and intends to bring down governments. But that wasn't enough for me. I needed a Deaver villain, which is somebody who is utterly sick and depraved and twisted, like the fellow from The Bone Collector you mentioned. And so Height has, let's say, an unhealthy obsession with decay and with the old, and with the concept of entropy, which is basically a fancy word both philosophically and in terms of the physical sciences for the decay of civilization and of matter and so on. We don't want to go into too many of the details, certainly on the air for your listeners, but let's just say he rises to the level of a particularly dark Deaver villain.
So no picture in your mind of James Bond as Sean Connery or Daniel Craig or Woody Allen or any of the people who've played him in the movies. You had your own picture of him.
I did indeed. Now, of course, all of those people come to mind, and I congratulate you on a reference to Woody Allen. Some of your listeners might might not know what that refers to, and of the piece from the 1960s that didn't really go anywhere. Let me put it this way. It may have done some business at the time, but I think it's sort of one of those very curious
One of the worst films. Movies ever made.
Yeah, it was a musical comedy, James Bond. What on earth can we do with that? But, in answer to your question, no, Woody Allen did not come to mind.
Oh, okay.
was writing Carte Blanche. But, you know, of course, I've seen most of the films. I like Daniel Craig a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He physically does not resemble my idea of Bond. That is Sean Connery, who had actually a somewhat of a resemblance to Hoagy Carmichael. And Craig, though, brought the dark edginess to the role that that Fleming put into the character. You know, a lot of people think that the 00, if they think about it at all, referred to permission that James Bond had to defend himself and kill somebody in the line of duty.
Yeah, the license to kill.
Yeah, 00, exactly that, meant he was an assassin. In fact, his first assignment when he earned the 00 was in New York City, Rockefeller Center, and he, with a high-powered rifle, got a room 300 yards from 30 Rock and shot somebody through the window, a spy, a Japanese spy. And, you know, this is not the kind of guy that who is, you know, prepared to defend himself. Well, he certainly is that. But he's somebody who would rarely go out on assignment and murder someone. And that is a quality that you can see in Daniel Craig's face in the two movies that he's been in. And I understand that the Bond number 23 is now underway. I don't know quite where they are, but I think Sam Mendes is directing. I could be wrong about that, but I think that was the plan originally. And Craig is starring as Bond again.
And I'm glad, because I liked both of those pictures a lot.
Yeah, they were very well done.
And, you know, I think that there was a period in the James Bond movies, particularly under the Roger Moore years, when it got so jokey and tongue-in-cheek that...
Yeah.
You know, although I like Roger Moore, but I didn't think those films were true to
me. It was typical of, say, The Saint, which Roger Moore was in, and a TV show, for instance, mm-hmm. like The Avengers, which you may recall.
Sure.
That there was an element of wink, wink, nod, nod at the at the camera, and it was sort of by definition a pastiche of the Fleming books. Those were, like, I don't exactly know when the Saint was on, the Avengers, I think were in the early 60s, so
yeah.
Bond was certainly popular at that point. And then, of course, we certainly had the Austin Powers films that are hilarious. You can't deny that.
Yeah.
But you have to be kind of careful that you can step into parody quite easily. And I was, in writing Carte Blanche, I was quite conscious of that. And so I tried to pull back and make the Bond in my book very intelligent. He's not a Superman. He makes mistakes, and yet he does tend to outthink the villains more than he shoots them or karate kicks them. I wanted to create a very thoughtful and really a great thinker of a spy, in addition to someone who is a tactician and knows his way around guns and so forth. But I want him to be a man of some substance.
We're speaking with Jeffrey Deaver, and he's the author of, I think, 6,000 crime novels, including the new James Bond novel, Carte Blanche. Well, of course, you have written a lot of books, and they're always kind of grim. Are you a grim and sad and depressed person thinking about death and murder all the time?
People are so sad to meet me because they're quite disappointed. When I do my author events, for instance, I never read from the books. I do, it's almost a stand-up comedy routine about writing, about my life as a writer. I think people should get to know the author at an event rather than be read to. You can certainly get an audio book if you want that experience. And I'm just kind of an easygoing kind of guy. I like, I watch Seinfeld, Curb Your Enthusiasm. I like, I'm not a grim kind of guy at all. But I will tell you this. I do firmly believe that fiction should be about, as I mentioned before, intense emotional engagement. And I have learned over the course of doing novels for 35 years or so that a crime story allows me to touch the reader on many different levels. For instance, there's always the element of the crime. And in my novels, the crime is, although there may have been something terrible in the past, a prelude, perhaps a murder or something, they're not about Miss Marple trying to figure out what happened. They are about a Jack Bauer kind of person trying to figure out what is going to happen. So we always have that core crime that is a theme running throughout the book, and the hero has to stop that. Well, that's only one of the four or five subplots in the book. In crime novels, you are allowed, in fact, you're almost expected to have a personal conflict as well. And I don't mean necessarily a cop getting divorced or one of the cliché things we've seen quite frequently and certainly in movies, but it could be a personal relationship conflict. For instance, in one of my books, a young woman was very distraught because her mother was suffering from Alzheimer's. And that was a plot that ran throughout the entire book. And, it had a lot of emotional impact, and readers responded to that very well. Well, then we also have elements of geopolitics and social issues that fall into crime novels. And I can play those games with my readers on just so many different levels. So that's why I like crime.
And you have a lot of readers. Do you ever feel like you want to, as you're writing, do you have your reader in mind? Are you thinking of how to control the speed at which the reader is reading and what's going to happen in the reader on the next page? Do you know what I'm saying?
Oh, very much so. I was doing an interview in England a few years ago, and most interviews are like our conversation, which is very enjoyable, and we're both having a good time talking. Well, I think this fellow was a frustrated investigative reporter, and so he said, just as I sat down, this is live radio at BBC, Mr. Deaver, what do you say to the charge that you're manipulative? And I said, thank you. It's the best compliment I've had today. because I am manipulative. That's my job. Roller coasters manipulate people. An Alfred Hitchcock film manipulates the readers, that's the viewers. That's part of the game. And the better manipulators we are, the better the experience. You touched on something that is very important to me, and I'm quite vocal about. I write for my readers. I have no patience for authors who come up with an idea and they think it's clever, and it may very well be clever and unique, but does it serve the reader's interest? That's my only goal, writing a book that gives readers what they want. And I spend a lot of time thinking about, will this story be something that my readers will, first of all, understand, and will it be something that they can fall into right away? I'll grab them right up front, and it will make them want to turn the pages. Mickey Spillane, the great pulp fiction writer from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, actually, he said, people don't read books to get to the middle. We read books to get to the end. And it's our job to make sure that we authors are in tune with the readers to the extent that we will be able to consistently produce a book that will get them to the end of the story.
We're talking with Jeffrey Deaver, and he is the great crime novelist who's now taken on James Bond in a new novel called Carte Blanche. Is Carte Blanche the beginning of a series of Bond stories?
No, it's not. I agreed with the estate to do one book, and now I'm back working on my own novels. My agreement was that I'm happy to do this. It's a big honor for me, but I have, many million fans around the world who expect both a Lincoln Rhyme, the character from The Bone Collector, and Catherine Dance, who is, of course, based on the Monterey Peninsula.
Yes.
An investigator with the California Bureau of Investigation and the body language expert. And I am writing, in fact, I'm finishing up in the next couple of weeks her next book, and then I'll be turning to a Lincoln Rhyme book for next year. But having said that, the experience of writing Carte Blanche was quite enjoyable. The estate is a very good group of people. I would certainly consider revisiting it. I think they as well had fun working with me, and the book has done phenomenally well. You never quite know with a somewhat specialized project like this how it will do, especially being an American writing a James Bond novel set in largely in England. But it has done very well. It sold a lot of copies, and the reviews have been quite good. I'm rather humbled to see the level of good reviews. So, we certainly would consider it, but it would have to fall within the time allotted to make sure I could continue with Catherine and with Lincoln.
What about the Ian Fleming devotees? Have they reacted to Carte Blanche?
Yeah, and the response has been generally pretty good. There, you're never going to please everybody, and you'll go crazy if you try to. There's some very curious things to me. For instance, there's a scene in which Bond is in South Africa, and he, of course, doesn't have his own sports car there. And he's undercover, so he needs to get a local car, and he forms a friendship with a South African Police Service detective, a young man, who says, oh, Mr. Bond, I know you like your cars. I've got you something very nice. It's a Subaru. Well, James Bond driving a Subaru? Well, it turns out it's an Impreza. Now, I don't know if you know Subarus, but that's a rally car. It's a really nice, fast, kind of gaudy, but a great car to drive. I enjoy cars, and I have actually driven one, and it's just a great car, and it's worthy of James Bond. Well, I think it is, because Bond enjoys driving anything, and he's a real car person. Well, some of the fans did not really like the fact that I put him behind the wheel of a Japanese import car, and I thought they probably should not be quite so worried about issues like that. But, you know, you can't, you know, as I say, you can't please everybody.
There's one last thing about Ian Fleming's style that I want to ask you about. You know, he was famous for giving his characters, especially the female characters, colorful names, like Pussy Galore is probably the most famous. So did you think about that as you were naming your characters?
Curiously, I had very little input from the Ian Fleming family. But one of the things they said was, have some fun with the names. And I did. We've got a woman who's a very savvy MI6 agent. MI6 is the British equivalent of the CIA, the Foreign Intelligence Service. And she's, you know, she wears a tight leather jumpsuit. She rides motorcycles. She drives very quickly herself, and she loves her cars. And yet I called her Ophelia Maidenstone, which struck me as being somebody who would take her wooden milk pail and wander out into the first Elizabethan fields to milk a cow with this, you know, massive pre-Raphaelite hair. And yet here she is, she's jumping on a BSA motorcycle and carrying a gun around. My favorite name, though, was the woman who runs a non-government organization, a food bank, basically. And her name is, in South Africa, her name is Felicity Willing. I love that name. And she is the true love interest in the novel.
Well, Jeffrey Deaver, so I guess a Catherine Dance novel is the next thing?
Oh, yes, that's right. It's untitled as yet. It's kind of a fun story. It takes place in both on the Monterey Peninsula as well as in the Central Valley near Fresno and up in the mountains a bit. And I certainly can tell just a little bit about it because it does have an interesting hook. The protagonist, aside from Catherine, of course, is a young woman, singer-songwriter, a la Taylor Swift, who comes from Fresno and actually still has a house there, but she is the subject of a stalker, quite a serious obsessed stalker, and he gets it into his head that she wrote a song just for him. Stalkers have quite a problem with reality, and of course she didn't know this fellow from Adam. She gets 1,000 fan letters a day, but he thinks that she wrote this song for him. And the song has, I think, 5 verses in it. And I used to be a singer-songwriter, so I had written about 10 songs that the lyrics will be printed in the book.
Oh, yeah.
But he takes this song of hers, the big hit, and then he bases a series of murders on each verse. And Catherine Dance has to try to stop him before he strikes again. But I came up with something kind of fun for this story. I will be going to Nashville in about 2 weeks and supervising the actual recording of this song so that when readers come to the URL and want to hear that verse, they can go online and download the song and play it. And we're having a fairly successful young singer-songwriter write the music, and she's going to perform it with a full, you know, full backup band. We're using musicians that have worked with Garth Brooks and Taylor and Shania Twain and so forth. So, it should be kind of a fun project.
Well, that sounds great. I hope when that book is ready, you'll come back to From the Bookshelf and talk to us again.
Oh, I'll absolutely do that, Gary.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on Facebook and iTunes. Thanks to Jeffrey Deaver, author of Carte Blanche, the new James Bond thriller. Also, thanks this week to Deborah Schneider for all her help. And we bid farewell this week to Brianne Beale, who has served from the bookshelf long and well. Good luck, Brianne. And we welcome aboard Frances Venegas and say thanks to her for her assistance. Thanks, Frances. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.